Now let's ask a question. What causes a person to be narcissistically wounded? But to address this question, we have to take a detour. I'm going to talk first about unconditional love. I'm not talking about romance here or fascination, because that may be more complicated. I'm just talking about simple, unconditional love. I was watching a couple with their dog in the park. The dog had short legs and was rushing along the hill through the leaves, full of delight. And the owners were laughing with delight at the dog's being true to itself. The dog was unconditionally loving its activity, loving the leaves, loving itself. And the owners were unconditionally loving the dog, not because it was a special breed or because it was doing something special, but because it was having fun. And having fun is a sign that one's love for oneself, at least at that moment, is okay. But it's not so easy to feel unconditional love for oneself. We are all too close to our own limitations and failures, and we may not have learned to love ourselves. We may instead have learned to criticize and reject ourselves. By loving self, I don't mean fascination or romance, and nor do I mean demands, criticism, and rejection. I mean a steady appreciation and acceptance, which has an eye towards future growth, if that is what your self needs for its own fulfillment. And when feeling this love, you will also be feeling centered rather than off-center, integrated rather than split off. And how might you experience this? Now, these examples are going to sound like self-help tips, but I don't mean them in that sense. I'm mentioning these things to try to convey the flavor of unconditional self-love. Enjoying a walk on a hilly road, feeling pleasure in your own muscles, feet, legs, heart, and lungs. Taking pleasure in having exercised enough previously so that your body can enjoy this challenge. Sitting down to a pleasurable meal by yourself with a newspaper, or with the sun on the table where you sit, or with flowers there for you to enjoy. Taking the time to shop for some clothing for yourself, choosing carefully to please yourself. Laughing, playing, having fun. Taking pleasure with other people and feeling that you belong with them so that you reaffirm each other. Meeting a friend, sharing a meal with a group of people, looking at someone and sharing a genuine smile. Feeling worthwhile, admirable, believing that what you offer others is important and serves some valuable purpose in the world, that you make things better than they would otherwise be. Standing aside to let someone else go first in a shop. Writing a letter to the paper and it gets printed. Cooking a meal for someone. And also creativity is a part of this. Taking time to work on a creative project, something in which you express yourself. It may be knitting or writing or painting or pottery or gardening. Trying to take time for this every day, even if only for half an hour. And I'll come back to creativity later. Now, how do you learn to love yourself like this? Well, the simplest way to learn this would be to learn it from your parents. And you might also learn it from other people that you are close to, from groups that you belong to, or from your own efforts and accomplishments. But if parents abuse a child or criticize the child excessively, that will prevent healthy self-love from developing. And too much praise may also do the same thing. If parents praise their children's accomplishments and specialness too much, then the child feels loved and accepted because of being special and different. The child feels that the child would not be loved if he or she were not special, and that may in fact be the case. The parent's love may indeed be conditional upon the child being gratifying to the parent. Now, Heinz Kohut identified three parallel lines in the development of self-love, and he called them mirroring, idealizing, and twinship. Mirroring begins ideally with your parents when you're an infant. It comes from the unconditional delight and pleasure in who you are and what you do that shows on their faces as they look at you. And if you get this unconditional delight from your parents, then you will tend to have ambition and to feel that you are somebody, that you can expect acknowledgement from the world. You learn to get mirroring as an infant, and then you securely internalize that learning, so that your process of getting it can mature as you get older, so that you can continue to get it as an adult. And then, on the occasions when you don't get it, perhaps when somebody tries to diminish you by withholding acknowledgement, or when circumstances go against you, or perhaps when you are unemployed, or you've moved away from your friends, or your spouse has left you, then you will not be too devastated, because even though you've been hurt, you will know that you can get mirroring elsewhere soon enough. But of course, the converse of this is also possible. If parents do not take delight in who you are as an infant, and you do not learn how to get this mirroring, so that your process of getting it does not mature as you get older, so you don't get enough of it as an adult, so that every time someone diminishes you or circumstances go against you, you're going to be devastated by that, because you will lack a secure sense that you can be someone, and you will tend to lack ambition. Kohut's second line of development he called idealizing. If you have parents you respect and admire, and as you grow up you gradually begin to understand your parents' limitations, then your admiration for them is not shattered, but becomes human scale and realistic, and you internalize the ability to believe in yourself realistically and to admire yourself realistically. And then you will tend to have ideals and to love your own beliefs and ideals just as you love your parents. That is, you will learn to be idealistic. But of course, the converse is also possible. If in the beginning you admire your parents, because all children do so in the beginning, and then, when you are still young, they betray your admiration traumatically. Perhaps they molest you or otherwise attack you. Perhaps they prove to be charlatans. Then you become sour and cynical, and you no longer can admire others or yourself, and you no longer can love your own values. Or you may tend to idealize other people's and beliefs in a primitive, maladaptive way because your capacity for idealization has never had a chance to mature. Kohut's third line of development he called twinship, and this is the feeling of being with or being like other people, of being what he called a human amongst humans. If your parents and siblings do things with you and spend time with you, and you feel like them, so you take pleasure in your own being, in your own self, because yourself being like others unites you with others. We say he's just like his daddy, or it may have to do with being on a sports team. Then this translates in adult life into the pleasure of friends and companions, translates into loving yourself because you feel like a human amongst humans. And the converse is also possible. The converse would be feeling like an alien, feeling different and strange and unacceptable, and rejecting yourself and despising yourself because you feel wrong or bad or alien. And this is an adolescent fear, adolescence fear being weird. When a man is secure in his self-love, we say he is secure. That's the popular term to describe this psychological state. Then he does not spend much energy worrying about himself. He tends to treat himself well. His estimation of himself is positive and realistic. It's realistic because it has always been in play and has been modified by feedback from others. And this is what we mean by healthy narcissism. He takes a pride in himself and a pleasure in his accomplishments, and he takes pleasure in showing his work to other people in order to give something of value to them. But when a man is not secure in self-love, then secretly he feels inadequate and worthless, and he defends against this feeling with an exaggerated, overblown image of himself, with being larger than life. He is inflated like a balloon to make up for his inadequate self-esteem. And such grandiosity is then a defense against narcissistic injury. And grandiosity may be expressed blatantly and overtly, like George Bush, "I'm a Christian president and God is on my side." Or like Donald Trump, "I own more real estate than everybody else, so I'm special." Or, "I can get into the best nightclubs, so I'm more special than all the people who cannot." or I'm acting so cool that I'm more interesting than other people. Or it may be expressed covertly. A man feels superiority, which he keeps more or less hidden in order to avoid having it challenged. He feels superior because he is more righteous, more sensitive, more insightful, more important, more creative, and more long-suffering. But he doesn't let on that he feels this way. And the grandiose defense, which conceals the low self-esteem, becomes a trap. The man feels phony. The grandiose shell feels false, because it is contradicted by the hidden internal low self-esteem. He cannot accept realistic praise because it doesn't match his grandiose fantasy about himself. To him, realistic accomplishments may feel beneath him. Or he may defend against realistic success because success stimulates his grandiosity. And he fears stimulating his own grandiosity because to be in a grandiose place is like being manic. It makes him feel crazy. So he fears success and he avoids it and keeps himself from achieving what he could. And as a result, genuine positive experiences cannot accumulate inside and cannot lead to an accumulation of genuine positive self-esteem. So he is trapped in grandiosity, secretly feeling awful about himself, and he cannot learn to feel more genuinely positive. Alternatively, grandiosity itself can be in the negative direction, and this is confusing and hard to understand. A narcissistic woman believes that she is more worthless, more foolish, more hopeless, more of a failure, more despised than anyone else. The trick is that her worthlessness is larger than life. Secretly, she is still special and still the focus of special attention. And she's liable to feel this way if she got too much negative attention as a child. Attention for her is based upon negativity.